The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 2001 movie, The Planet of the Apes. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it an ambitious remake by an unconventional director, or are they just monkeying around? We watched Planet of the Apes from 2001 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know where the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features Cast, this time looking at Planet of the Apes from 2001. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thank you very much, Trevor. It's great to be back, as always, on the Redeeming Features podcast.
I do look forward to this.
Oh, look, it's always great. As we say, you know, even if the movie's terrible, we know that the chat isn't, so it's always something to look forward to.
And this time it's all on you, because you're the one who suggested Planet of the Apes, the remake, the Tim Burton remake, I believe.
Yes, and going into it sort of, I suppose, completely unknown, I think the original idea was going to be something like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I didn't want to have to watch that, so I thought, why don't I look at sort of another, I suppose, a remake, another remake that Tim Burton's tackled, and something that I didn't really know anything about, so I was going completely cold into this, so... So I take responsibility for choosing it, but it wouldn't be my normal choice. So thank you for indulging me, I suppose.
Hey, look, my pleasure. It was a new experience for me as well. And I do look for new experiences. And I take what I do from those new experiences. I don't want to talk too much about what I took from this experience just yet. Obviously, we want to save that for a bit later. But for those out there who don't know, I've got a bit of a synopsis for Planet of the Apes here. An Air Force astronaut crash lands on a mysterious planet where evolved talking apes dominate a race of primitive humans.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up quite well.
Yeah, it's not much more you can say. I mean, if you're aware of the original one, the 1968, I believe, Charlton Heston... classic, which I'm pretty sure I have seen a long time ago. Yeah, I guess it doesn't really mess too much with that basic formula.
Yeah, well, I actually confess to have never seen the original, but I know the story and the basic sort of following, and I've seen the recent remake, I suppose, or the new franchise that came out in 2011. So know the basic feel, and from what I've read, they did use a lot of elements from, you know, the 68 version and the original book that it was based on. So, yeah. So I suppose it was very much a reinterpretation of the book. So, so that's what we were going in with. So,
absolutely. Well, before we start talking about the movie itself, obviously we need to get our turkey trivia out of the way. So we talk a bit of turkey about the potential turkey. So Planet of the Apes... it's actually rated 5.7 out of 10 on IMDb. It had a budget of $100 million, and it ended up taking $362 million worldwide at the box office. So in the long run, I think it managed to do decent business, but the opening weekends, just when I went back through the figures... it's obviously the opening weekend would have been disappointing for the people involved.
Well, I think that, $300 million, I know when I read it, I was like actually quite surprised, but I vaguely do remember when the movie came out and there was quite a lot of promotion for it. And I think I read somewhere that they did a lot of promotion on the internet, and there was a lot of sort of, you know, sort of tactics like that. And I think I do remember seeing a lot of posters where they'd use the image of the apes, you know, to sort of lead up into the year, sort of about a year up until the movie came out. So I could see that would have been quite a big thing behind it. And also, too, the fact that it was the remake or, you know, a reinvigoration of this series that had been quite popular. You know, I don't know when the last Planet of the Apes movie had been before this, but it definitely would have had that interest built in. And, of course, being a Tim Burton movie, because this was kind of on the cusp where just before his movie started to not be very good. So there was sort of the golden years of Tim Burton. And so this was sort of at the sort of on the cusp of that.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, obviously, we already covered that this is a Tim Burton movie. But just looking at some of the other names in this movie, we've got Marky Mark himself, Mark Wahlberg, taking the lead role. Tim Roth. A big shock in the Tim Burton movie. We've got Helena Bonham Carter.
Oh, my gosh.
Also the likes of Michael Clarke Duncan and Paul Giamatti, probably the bigger names in this one. And also David Warner. I always think when David Warner turns up, it seems to be the actor you get when you want a bit more legitimacy in your movie for some reason.
Yeah, I can see that, actually. I know what you mean. And I noticed, I think I read somewhere that, I think it's Lisa Marie, which is another actress that's always in a lot of, used to be in a lot of Tim Burton movies. This was actually the film where he was with her at the time, and this was actually the film where he pretty much dropped her and started a relationship with Helena Bonham Carter. So he must have been working his way through the actresses, I don't know. So that was a bit of trivia there. So I don't know. I think they were probably the only sort of regulars. But yeah, as you said, they were the other big names that were in the film.
Indeed. Look, I've got to admit straight up, even before I watched this movie, I had an alternative title that came into my head. And I don't know if it was good or if it gave me certain expectations. But from about 3 days before I watched this movie, I could only think of it as Marky Mark and his Monkey Bunch.
Well, very clever. And, you know, considering it sort of has this sort of somewhat retro feel about it, I'm even thinking with the spacesuits and stuff they're wearing, I could almost see it fitting with a bit of a nostalgia wave. So, yeah, Marky Mark and the Monkey... What was it? The Monkey Bunch, was it?
Yeah, instead of his Funky Bunch.
Oh, that's perfect.
We've got his Monkey Bunch.
That's perfect. And, God, and they pretty much were a Monkey Bunch. Like, I thought it was funny. I read that they actually had to go to... The cast had to go to ape school for about 2 or 3 months. In the lead up to the film so that they could get all the sort of the nuances right. And yeah, I suppose they do pretty much nail them in a lot of cases, but I don't know where one goes to learn how to be an ape, but they obviously exist in Hollywood.
I'm strongly resisting the urge to make a Harambee joke, so let's move on quickly to some other trivia. Now, as we mentioned, Marky Mark, I should call him Mark Wahlberg, but I just can't help myself. So Marky Mark joined the film after meeting with Tim Burton for only 5 minutes. He was so anxious to work with Tim Burton that he basically agreed to play any part. He dropped out of a role in Ocean's 11 to do this film, but he refused to wear a loincloth like Charlton Heston did in the original Planet of the Apes, because he did not want to remind audiences of his underwear modelling career.
Oh, that's so bizarre. Well, I suppose it would have been at that point where he was trying to make himself... He was trying to be a serious actor. So, yeah, I can see he was sort of trying to get away from his roots, but that is very funny.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, look, he's in good shape in the movie, so the loincloth wouldn't have been a bad idea. But if he was worried about people remembering that... Can sort of understand it.
Fair enough. But like, he's not the only one who turned down, I guess, in hindsight, what might have been better career moves. Because Tim Roth, in order to star in this film, declined the role of Professor Severus Snape in Harry Potter.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that was probably a big mistake.
Yep. But then... I suppose that was the disadvantage of Severus Snape being in the very first Harry Potter movie, because obviously Helena Bonham Carter still got to play Bellatrix Lestrange in the later Harry Potter movies. So, yeah, I'm just wondering what Tim Roth thought in hindsight.
Oh, I know. Especially, well, they were probably thinking, like a lot of people were, even Fox were thinking that this was going to end up being a franchise, that this was going to end up having, you know, sequels and, you know, to sort of reinvigorate that Planet of the Apes story. So, you know, he was probably thinking this was going to be the next best thing for him. So they weren't to know.
Yes, indeed. And they definitely tried to keep some of the nostalgia there, because both Charlton Heston and Linda Harrison make cameo appearances in this movie, and they were both obviously, well, Charlton Heston, obviously, but also Linda Harrison, were in that original 1968 movie.
And so I always think when that sort of happens, it kind of almost gives its blessing, I suppose, to the new works, and they obviously like it, or they probably just wanted the money, I don't know. But, I had read that, and I was trying to work out which one he was, and I finally worked it out, so. But I'm sorry, I was mentioning before about actors and things that he's worked with in the past, but it was good to see Danny Elfman back doing this, and I was wondering, how is his score going to be with this, you know, because he uses a lot of sort of, you know, I suppose spooky sounds. So I think I read this was the first time he'd used more sort of percussive instruments, and you can tell, I could definitely tell straight away that this was a very different score for him. So good to know that he's quite diverse in his arrangements. So
yeah, absolutely. But just quickly, I think before we go any further, we've got to make sure that we don't call this a remake of the original, because Tim Burton himself insisted this movie was not a remake, but a reimagination of Planet of the Apes. It uses the idea of an ape-inhabited planet, however, tells a different story.
Okay, well, that, and I suppose that gives him a bit more license. Heck, he ruined Alice in Wonderland by doing the same thing, so I suppose he could. He's got his own license with this, so okay, good to know that that's where he's coming from with it. But it doesn't, that's it, it doesn't feel very much like a Tim Burton film. But as, you know, I know we'll speak a bit more about it, but yeah, it was at that stage where he was sort of making that transition, so.
Yeah, probably safe to say it's Tim Burton's action movie, I guess, in a way. I guess more on that as we go. But before we get too much into the details, Christian, we better set our baseline.
Oh, of course.
Mm-hmm. What we need to work from. So I've been to Amazon, being one of the easiest places to dig up movie reviews, and I've grabbed this review to see what we're working with here and what we're working from. The title of this review is, What Film Was This Again? Wow, this was a complete disappointment and was stripped of all the mind-blowing details that made the original so great. Humans can talk, and they aren't even on Earth in this film. The ending made no sense to me whatsoever, and the decision to change it from the original's iconic end was disastrous. Just another attempt to cover a poor story with nice special effects and line their pockets with our hard-earned cash. I rarely say this, but I wouldn't sit through this again even if they paid me. 1 star.
Ouch. This is one time I'm probably not agreeing with a lot of the things in that review. So, yeah, but as you said, it can only go up from here, possibly. So, yeah, but you have reminded me about a couple of things in the movie, too, as you said that. So, but yeah, okay, a 1-star review.
Absolutely. And Christian, 2 hours. You picked a 2-hour movie.
I know. I saw it too. I was like, damn it, so let's just see, maybe you can redeem us, excuse the pun, for the next movie, but we'll get through this one first. But hey,
I've seen longer movies that were perfectly watchable. I know I do harp on about that, but you do seem to pick a lot of movies that hit that 2-hour mark. I don't know, you have a knack for it, Christian, you really
do. For someone that hates long movies too, I don't know what it is, maybe my curiosity of watching a longer movie, and then I see it and go, oh god. But I must admit, the full running time breezed past. I even remember thinking at one stage, oh god, wouldn't even be halfway through, and it was, you know, half an hour to the end, so. I felt it at a breeze, you know, it was quite, that 2 hours went, you know, passed quite quickly, so I was happy for that.
Fair enough. Now, I did notice, though, the opening, like right from the outset, the opening was very dramatic. Obviously, you're mentioning that score with the percussion and the having these slow pans across and then dissolving to like a big starscape. I was actually waiting for like the Star Wars opening crawl.
Oh, I know, it was so much like that. yeah. But that it was, yeah, it, and that's the thing. Like, I was trying the whole time to think too, were these effects good for 2001? Like, it's hard for me because I don't watch a lot of sci-fi, you know, and I watch this only on a small screen. So I'm thinking to myself, yeah, was this, yeah, this does look pretty good for its time, but I am no expert.
Yeah, I think effect-wise, you probably really couldn't criticize it too badly. The spaceship, the space station they were on looked very nice. They had the little pod spaceships to hoon around in. Even though the first shot of like the spaceship was actually in a simulator. With the chimpanzee in there showing why you don't monkey around in a spaceship simulator.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't help it. I couldn't help myself.
I know, it's just going to keep coming up, isn't it? You know?
No, I didn't know.
You mentioned the pods or I think the capsule or whatever he ends up going out of later, but it just reminded me the whole time of a hairdryer, and I'm just like, don't think of it like that. You know, I think that's the one you mean too, and I'm like, just like, oh, don't think of it, but once you see something like that, you can't unsee it.
I will only think of them as the hairdryer ships now.
Of course, they're bound to crash.
We very quickly get introduced to Marky Mark and his monkey friend. and they seem to have quite a good, little rapport going on until they get back to where these chimps are kept on this space station, and he gets accused of teasing the monkey. Okay.
Yeah, it's like, so, but you know, then you obviously find out that, you know, they're setting up sort of his relationship with it for later on in the film. But yeah, I did sort of think, oh, why is this sort of happening? But yeah, it was kind of an interesting part.
Yeah, actually, quite interesting. Like, another thing, again, like I said, just harking back to my approach to this movie when, like, it's not that important. The only important reason that he gets a phone call from all his friends back on Earth is so that the call can be interrupted. But I just thought, right, there's Marky Mark's Funky Bunch. There it is.
There you go. They're not monkey anymore. They're funky.
He's back to his Funky Bunch.
Well, I think I even read too somewhere that, you know, once you, and I hope I'm not giving too much away, but once you sort of give into this movie as being sort of almost B-grade and sort of fitting those sort of tropes and sort of, like, just have a bit of fun with it, you sort of can, you know, run with it a little bit. And, I sort of think it's good that, as you said, it got, you know, it doesn't waste any time getting into it. And I even noticed with the spacesuits being almost retro style as well. So even though it's supposed to be, it was supposed to be set then, or I don't know if they were supposed to go for a 60s sort of look, but it felt like they were trying to do their own kind of, I don't know, they were trying to do a 2001 A Space Odyssey and giving it that real, that real 60s sci-fi look, I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely had a, like, I suppose, yeah, the feel. I mean, everything was very, I think, probably about the level that, as you would expect for 2001, but yeah, had these retro touches to it. Now, I've got written down here that I guess 2029 had some pretty advanced chimps. So I'm guessing at some point it did actually say that the year was 2029. I don't know where I got that number from. I actually can't remember seeing it now, and I only watched this movie 2 days ago.
Well, but actually, yeah, that number does sound familiar to me, but yeah, so I must have heard it too, but yeah, I have no recollection of where. So 2029, okay, so not too much further, so, but it would have been, I suppose, in 2001.
That was the far future, back in 2001. but yeah, so, I mean, they do set up quite quickly, as you mentioned. They, a big, giant, purple magnetic storm, space storm, just turns up and it's something they'd never seen before. So they go and send the chimp who just messed up in the simulator, they send that chimp out to check out the storm, which doesn't seem like the best first choice when you're trying to investigate something that you have no idea what it is.
I know, because I think doesn't Mark Wahlberg, he's like going, I'll do it instead, I'll do it. And they're like, nah, we'll just send the chimp, it's easier.
Yeah, they'd rather lose a chimp than lose him. But then when the chimp does mysteriously disappear, didn't see that coming. And he gets, and they tell Marky Mark that he's not allowed to go. And he just, like, the security on this space station is pathetic. I mean, he's right behind them. Like, all that's separating them is a sliding glass screen. And no one notices that he is getting into one of these hairdresser ships. Or hairdryer ships. And just taking off without permission until he's already launched and he's halfway to the storm. And then they go, hang on, wait! What? You? No! Come back! What is wrong with you people? You are just... I
know.
These people are probably meant to be like the best of the best and the smartest to be out on this research station, which I believe was orbiting Saturn, I think, because I guess that's the visually easy planet to convey in our solar system. You know, chuck a few rings about it, there's Saturn.
Yeah.
But it's like, how could they not know that another one of these ships was launching? That was the first thing that made me full on go, what? And that was barely into the movie.
It's like he's doing whatever he can to just rush through this part of the movie just to get him to the planet to start the plot. And there was just so many oversights. I don't know, because yeah, it does seem a lot of that part was, even though we said, you know, yeah, doesn't wasting time getting into it, but it almost feels very rushed. That doesn't really give us time to get into anything there. So yeah, I think a very big oversight there.
Yeah. They do the bare minimum, before, having him, attacked by flashy purple lights and having him crash land on a planet where he sets water on fire.
Yeah, I thought that too. That was quite strange. But we are on a foreign planet where apes can talk, so I suppose anything's possible. That's what, anytime I question something in this movie, I just kept remembering that.
Okay, fair enough. But like, it's not even like the ship stayed on the surface of the water, like immediately sunk under. And I would have thought that a suit suitable for the vastness of space would have been good protection when you're trapped underwater, but he pretty much takes a helmet off before he even leaves the pod, so that he then has to quickly get to the surface. And again, I'm thinking, you guys really do not make very good choices.
Oh, yeah, and it's like maybe we actually have stumbled on the incompetent ship, not the people that are the best out there. I don't know. Maybe they've hoped for them to crash and just sent them out as guinea pigs. I don't know. But, yeah, so many weird choices.
we'll send the good people off in these ship, and these other guys, well, they're just about competent enough to look after the monkeys. Yeah. And no, we were wrong. They're not.
Again, not wasting any time getting into it. I think it was just them we just want to get him to the ape so that we can show off all this impressive makeup that we've spent millions on. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we again don't waste much time. Suddenly there's all these people in caveman garb, I guess you can call it, running around. And he immediately runs with them when he sees something jumping around in the background. Yeah, he's definitely not picking up any good vibrations. I couldn't resist that one, sorry.
Oh, and this is, I think, when we get, they all storm in, and I don't know if this is the part where I've got here when he flies up in the air, because, like, let's just say there's a lot through this movie that I always laugh at, which was in terms of every time someone gets hit, it's an obvious harness being pulled, and they just fly dramatically through the air, and I think this was the first time that happened, because I think that's when they first come out of when we first see the monkeys, I don't know.
Don't call them monkeys.
Yeah, I know. Oh. I even had to correct myself then. I'm like, oh no, that's right. I've got to learn something from this movie.
they get quite upset if you call them monkeys. But like the first time he gets hit by one of them, he flies, just flies like through this jungle to land some distance away and doesn't hit a single tree or anything along the way.
Of course not.
Cute thing. And finally, when all the humans and he get rounded up, I kind of did like the turnaround they did of the classic line from the original movie where the ape gets, "Take your hands off me, you damn dirty human." That was a nice touch.
Yeah, it's good. See, and it's funny because they, again, he wants to try and get away from the original, you know, but, you know, there's all these little references to that first one. But yeah, and there's always, I've got written here, never send a monkey to do a man's job. I think that's another line that comes up quite a lot through it as well. I heard a couple of times. So, so we essentially have entered a world where humans are slaved by the apes, that's right. And they're, you know, so this is where it's, because he's gone in time in the capsule, so we're now in 2029 now?
That was 2029 when he left in the capsule. At this point, you obviously don't realise what has happened. They said that for a twist later.
Yes.
But it never really establishes, I suppose, when this is all happening in terms of time. Some time has passed.
I was going to say, I'd be a bit worried if it was 2029, because, God, a lot changes in the next few years for us.
Indeed. But I tell you what, another thing I just could not help but noticing, as all these humans get rounded up and put into cages, and, you know, they're showing all these dudes with messy hair and beards, and they're all grotty, and then it cuts to the very few women that are in there, and they're all clean with a wonderfully perfect hair.
Well, it's really funny that you brought that up, because I noticed, well, you know, as soon as we go into seeing the female apes of Helena Bonham Carter and whoever the other actresses were playing them, I noticed, and it must have been a thing, it's almost like it was in the contract for all the female, or for all the actresses, we must look as glamorous as possible, still looking like monkeys as well. So, because it's funny that you said that about the humans, because, yeah, I just noticed that the monkeys just had this, like, the male apes were very, very convincing makeup-wise, and I remember reading that a lot, it got a lot of praise for its makeup design, but I just felt the female apes just weren't as convincing, and it was almost like they were trying to glamorize them a little bit, or the women didn't quite want to go as messy, maybe.
I think the whole idea, because, like, in this movie, it's the female apes that are a much more, I suppose, reasonable, you know, I guess, you know, they're nowhere near as aggressive or nasty as the male apes, and I think they wanted to make them look friendlier, but I also thought, like, with the female apes, they seem to have a closer look to the way the apes were portrayed in the original, so I don't know if it was kind of like a bit of a combination of trying to make them appear nicer, and also put that, like, you know, put that little extra bit of homage in there as well.
And I suppose, so they weren't, you know, I suppose, can you imagine if they all looked like those? Because some of those apes were pretty terrifying looking. So, you know, I suppose watching a whole movie of all of them, yeah, it kind of softened it a little bit. So, yeah, I can sort of see where you're coming from there.
Yeah, and like, yeah, they're just the differences, you know, because you got the female apes all very calm and composed. And I suppose even a bit later that they show some of the other calmer apes on the male side as well, and they're all, like, doing perfectly normal human things, like having dinner parties, but just with slight twists. But then you've got the more aggressive ones, and they all talk like this all the time.
It's like they've got a lot of the stereotypes of our culture and just sort of, yeah, played off that a lot, sort of ramped it up a bit. And, like, it's and I even thought it was funny how Paul Giamatti's character was like, you know, I've got my notes here, you know, that even apes can come to an arrangement, how he kind of, you know, whispers in his ear, you know, I'm sure we can come to some sort of arrangement or something. And I thought, yeah, but she was quite strong and just sort of pushed him away and was, yeah, again, they were the ones that were sort of more appealing to us. We could relate to a lot more, I suppose. The more human of the apes, let's just say.
yeah, there was certainly a bit of a disconnect. But I guess, I think, like, all the really, really aggressive ones were all part of the military and the soldiers anyway. So, I suppose that was just ape society. You know, you've got particular ones that gravitate to particular roles.
Again, probably, yeah, bit of a social commentary as well, which I'm sure what the original would have been about as well, sort of showing these, you know, a progression of civilization as apes and you know, because it can happen in every society, so. But anyway.
Yeah, yeah. and still all types. Like the so it was essentially, I don't know if the human pet store owner, I don't even know who played that one. I can't remember his name, but the one that was trying to act like Billy Crystal.
I can't remember. Yeah, I ended up getting so mixed up with who was who.
I'm not going to try to keep track of any of the names because, frankly, the names, I could not remember who was called what while I was watching this movie because they seemed to throw in so many different characters in quite quick succession. You don't get a chance to really get a handle on who's who. There's Angry Ape. He's obviously the bad guy. He is nice female ape. She's going to help them. Here's this comical Billy Crystal type ape. He's going to go along as comic relief at some point.
Yeah.
It was more a grand, I think more than characters, they were archetypes, I suppose.
Yeah. And I must admit, like, sort of around this point was where I started to go, oh, hang on, you know, I was sort of not overthinking the movie. I was kind of thinking, oh, it's going to go all sci-fi and be all very deep and all this sort of stuff. And then I started to realize, hey, hang on, that quote or reference that I'd read about, sort of, it has a lot of the tropes of like a B movie, you know, like someone with his ray gun, you know, walking through, you know, so it essentially is an adventure road movie, you know. And I think once I sort of realized it was that, you could sort of have a lot more fun with it. Not saying that I wasn't having fun with it at that point, but I realized, hang on, there's not much to this movie. And so, yeah, I don't think, again, yeah, remembering the names of the characters probably wasn't that important, so.
Yeah. And I'm glad you agree with me because, like I said, I've even got a list of actors and characters here off to one side on my tablet, and I'm thinking, I still don't know who was who beyond Helena Bonham Carter being the nice female ape.
Yeah. Called Ari. That's the only one I've got written down. So we've managed to come up with one.
There we go. No, I'm not going to go any further. Because obviously she inevitably helps them when Marky Mark proves that he's more advanced by helping them all escape. But it wasn't exactly a stealthy escape, though. Pretty much ran through every single house in the village, from what I could see.
Yeah, pretty much causing as much destruction as possible. But hey, they had to get out of there, so.
Yeah, but all such funny things is happening as, you know, it's not like an ape female is jumping on a bed because she sees a mouse. Oh no, the humans run through the bedroom and the ape female leaps to the roof and, like, hangs off the chandelier. Oh, stop.
Oh, I know. And I don't know if it was around here at one stage where there was a female ape doing a sexy scarf dance for one of... I think it was around this point, maybe they were creeping through one of the rooms. Again, playing off these sort of stereotypes or these tropes. I don't know what part that was.
I actually think she's the one that jumped to the roof when they...
Oh, okay. And I'm just like going, oh my God, what have they stumbled into? Get out of that room. I don't need to see this.
Yeah, they... Like, particularly, like, with that dinner party and with a lot of the stuff they showed through this sequence, like, through that entire area, I think they were trying really hard to just have these apes do as just simple, like, human-type activities as we'd expect if you were going through people's rooms as possible, but then just putting that little twist on. Like, you've got... Helena Bonham Carter's character at one point writing in a diary and she's writing away and then it cuts to a wider shot and you see that she's writing it with her foot. You know, she's doing a completely mundane thing but doing it in just that slightly different way. So I think, you know, they really tried hard to, on one hand, just make this as normal as possible with just those little twists.
And that almost, to me, that they sound like real Tim Burton touches, I think, to the film. And I, you know, that sounds like the sort of quirky things that he would put in a film to sort of, you know, because he's sort of, his film sort of, not saying that these are about underdogs or sort of alternative people, but, you know, or outsiders, but oh, I suppose they are, they're talking apes. So, yeah, so it seems like a very Tim Burton thing to have added into the film.
I've got a bit glassy. I threw this bit though because it just kept on going. for what seemed like a very long time.
Well, yeah, it's all like, cause that's what I was saying before. Once you sort of realise it was an adventure movie where, okay, they've been captured, they need to escape, and he eventually stumbles on the spaceship that he landed in, or whatever it was going back to. Yeah, and yeah, that essentially is it. So yeah, it you know, there wasn't much to it. And but I, of course, you know, being a big fan of sort of retro, you know, B grade films, I loved as soon as Leo or the Mark Wahlberg character got a ray gun, I'm like, ah, here we go, it's going to start doing being a bit like that, and it did sort of follow through on all of those sort of tropes.
Yeah, I say it was a good thing that all the stuff that he had to dive into the water to retrieve, which also gave us the nice little bit of information that the apes were afraid of water because none of them could swim.
That's going to be useful. I thought that too. Sorry.
Yep. But like everything he pulled out from the crashed ship under the water, I'm glad all that stuff was waterproof.
Oh, well, that's one thing in comparison to what we were saying earlier about the incompetence of the crew. But, this brings up another thing that we sort of stumble on later when he finds the thing that's buried with the computer thing. God, this, you can see all my technical jargon here. But I just love how everything miraculously still works, you know. Yeah. It's all, even though it's all been smashed up and all that. Because, of course, if it didn't work, we wouldn't have the climax of the film where he gets to use all that equipment and all that. But I just found it was always like, oh, how convenient, everything's all still okay.
Yeah, you're heading to another thing that, I tried to just sit back and watch this as a B-movie, but there was stuff that yes, I went, yeah. So we'll get to that bit in a bit, I guess, because quite a bit happens between getting his ray gun back and before we get our big twist reveal. Our first big twist reveal, I should say.
Oh, well, that's the thing. It was around here. You know, listeners would probably know that Rocky, I mean, Trevor and I do Rocky Horror, and I know there was an AP line of that came up when the blonde girl says to Leo, "You're hurt." And I just thought, oh, no shit, Sherlock, what was your first clue? Or something like that. I don't know if you thought of it at the time, but again, maybe I was just getting washed over by the whole B-gradeness of it all. But not saying that it's a B-grade movie, but yeah.
Yeah, oh, the perfectly, the always clean female human who just kind of tags along. I don't know, for some reason, the vast majority of her dialogue is just not registering in my head because...
Oh, yeah, I can't even remember what she did.
she did not do a hell of a lot except run around showing her cleavage in a fairly skimpy loincloth.
Well, maybe they felt like they had to have another female character because, well, they couldn't exactly use Helena Bonham Carter as an ape looking sexy, so I don't know.
I mean, yeah, you wouldn't think that they'd have Helena Bonham Carter as a love interest, but there were a few times there where I'm going, is Marky Mark going to get some good vibrations with the ape or not? Are they trying to give it this feeling, or is it just, I don't know, but yeah.
It didn't help that a lot of her lines were very softly spoken and very, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. So it did almost feel like it was going into this big romantic scene. So.
Yeah, and the heads were like really close together and looking at each other's eyes, and Marky Mark has just got his Marky Mark expression on his face. Which hasn't changed a lot for Mark Wahlberg, really. But
that always kind of, he's got that confused slash sort of angry, or he's always got his eyebrows kind of, yeah.
He didn't have his Boston accent, though. I actually think this could have been improved if Marky Mark had have just let his Boston accent come through.
Would have been interesting, actually.
Give just how dumb the human seem at time in this movie, it would have been perfect.
But he wanted to be a big serious actor, so he didn't want to be doing some B-grade thing.
He did, and but yeah, obviously, you know, the humans, it's just like, you know, they were nothing but livestock until Marky Mark comes along and suddenly shows them that they can fight back. You know, they managed to steal the horses from the militant. I think the military were all meant to be like chimpanzees or something. I'm just Yeah. Again, just all blurry together.
Yeah, that I was watching it with a friend, and I even in many times had to go, are they supposed to be, I think in the new version, they're supposed to be the people, anyway. Yeah. So I'm glad that, I'm also a bit glad that you're confused a bit too.
Oh, yeah, just like I said, at one point I gave up trying to work out, what was what and who was who, because it was just easier that way.
Hang on. Sorry, I actually just got to a note, just to revert a little bit back to what we were saying about Helena Bonham Carter and Mark Wahlberg's characters kind of getting a bit close. There was that line that she kept saying about, you just dropped in from the stars. That was the line that she kept saying. And I think there was about two or three times that she said it. And, you're kind of going, oh, it was a bit soppy.
yeah. Because I mean, no one believes it at first, but then obviously he retrieves his stuff from his ship and suddenly everyone believes him.
He dropped in from the stars, yeah.
He dropped down from the stars.
Oh, but it must all be, he must be something wonderful because all of his equipment is still working.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I've got to admit, like, a lot of what happens is just like one thing after another. I mean, I know I like to sort of like, no, I'm trying to avoid just summarizing the plot because that isn't putting me much point in this movie. Which is just like apes, stuff happens, the end. But yeah, it seems like any time, like you see how hopeless the humans are very, very early on in the movie, that they have no defense against this ape. So then later on, a group of about four humans and three apes. So you've got Helena Bonham Carter, the other good ape, and the Billy Crystal, I'm taking along as a comic relief ape, and they managed to raid and set fire to pretty much a full ape military encampment before escaping across the river. And you see, going, well, really, if the humans are this resourceful, they shouldn't have needed Marky Mark.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too. Like we were saying before, it's like he had to come in to save the day with something that it seems like they all could have probably done all along, or maybe just didn't bother taking the initiative.
And again, like, you know, the only humans traveling with them, because they leave pretty much everybody else in the cages when they escape, yet word of their deeds seem to spread across the human community. So when they finally get to the thing you were talking about before, the technological thing, where it's just like, oh my God, it's my space station. It's been here for centuries. What? I've gone forward in time.
I know. And then you're just like, what?
And then, you know, we suddenly got just like a whole army of humans turning up because they've heard of his deeds and they're looking to you for inspiration. And he turns up and pretty much tells them, you've all got to leave. We can't win. Good speech. Good speech, Marky Mark.
Good and like, somehow I don't know how they got the memo though, like to all meet there, but they all somehow found it. So yeah, that's what I'm thinking. You're considering he's supposed to be the human that's coming in to save the day. You'd think he'd have a bit more of a motivational speech than that.
Well, at no point, at this stage of the movie, do you ever get the feeling he's doing anything other than trying to get himself home? I mean, basically he seems to be very much motivated by his desire to just get out of there. Particularly, and then that comes through loud and clear when he basically just tells all the other humans, Nope, I can't help you. Go away. But
because he was me as you were saying that, I'm like, oh, maybe it's kind of a twist on the Wizard of Oz story. And I'm like, no, at least Dorothy wanted to actually help her friends at the end get what they wanted. No, he gets to go home and they don't get anything.
But yeah, so he gets back to the space station, which is this ruin on the ground, and he works out that, you know, the apes have all evolved from the various primates that were on board the space station. What another big shock! I was so surprised. and then he checks it and realizes something about the nuclear engines will, like, never run out of juice or something. I remember that specifically he said that the power source of the space station basically never runs out, and so when he gets there, he's able to activate quite a few things.
How convenient.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, when Helena Bonham Carter's character goes off, because you got the militant apes, basically, I think we get our first, like, our biggest bit of CGI is this ape army coming across the planes.
Yeah, it looked convincing enough. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good enough at the time. It really was.
Yeah. And I'm glad they didn't use too much CGI in this, actually very limited CGI, because I think that could have actually been really detrimental to it.
Yeah, I think, like, it was one of these movies where, like, I suppose CGI was used to make, like, you know, the landscape look bigger, you know, those more subtle touches which you know, work well by just being in the background so you don't notice them.
Yeah, that's where it works to its advantage, CGI.
Yeah. But then, yeah, Helena Bonham Carter goes to plead with big, bad, militant ape who is just that one.
I was going to say, ape. And no name.
The bad guy ape. And so as soon as he brands her with the brand they use to brand humans, I just went, that's going to be the turning point for Marky Mark. He doesn't give a crap about the thousands of humans looking to hope for him, but the fact that the nice ape has been branded and hurt, that's going to be Marky Mark's line in the sand. And yep, sure enough, yeah, that's when he decides to enact his grand plan.
And again, you're thinking, is this going to be a romantic thing between him and the female ape? Because it's almost like, yeah, he's saved the day for her, but anyway, no.
Yep, and just basically for his grand plan, he gets a few humans up front to, I suppose, act as bait/delaying factor, including the one who has to fight up front, because I've got to prove myself. And I'm thinking, who are you again? Where did you come from? You're, what, the brother of Blondie barely says anything and is just there to show off a cleavage? I don't know who you are and why I should care about you. Oh, look, your horse is going to fall over and be frozen until Marky Mark saves you. Fair enough.
And again, I suppose it's so late into it, we don't even really care about their names.
No. And he gets all the other humans to go behind the ship, and he goes, we'll only have one chance at this, and he fires off the ship's, like, big rocket, and that drains the fuel. The apparently inexhaustible fuel source is completely drained from that, yet he goes back and there's stuff inside that still works, like the bulletproof glass door.
Oh, I know, I just don't get that. But then, of course, it has to work because they wouldn't be able to resolve the plot.
Yeah, and we have all the apes descend on the humans after a bit of disorientation, and there's all these fights going on, and, like, you know, not a single ape seems to be able to land so much as a punch on Marky Mark until he faces off with a head ape who proceeds to start pounding the absolute you-know-what out of him.
Yeah, and I think it's up to there that it seems like he can do no wrong, Marky Mark, but, you know, he meets his match in that case.
Indeed. Until we get another glowing purple thing in the sky and another hairdryer ship crash lands, and we
meet again the monkey that was set up, or the chimpanzee that was set up in the opening scene, which is, I must admit, I was, you know, knowing at the start, I'm like, yeah, this is going to come back again, there's going to be reference, but I had completely forgotten about it by the time he came back.
Oh, as soon as I saw it coming down, I just went, okay, that's going to have the original chimp, but they all know the original chimp, because they call him by something beginning with S, and they're all going, oh, our great and merciful God, basically.
And I think, wasn't it the fact that Marky Mark knows him really well and they've got that special bond, they automatically go, oh, he must be okay as well.
Yeah, they were all except for Big Bad bad guy, evil ape, who ends up hurting their god chimpanzee and...
Oh, that's right, and then no he... Because he crawls off and you think he's...
Yeah.
Sorry, it's all coming back to me now, Trevor. Yeah. It's only been a couple of days since I've watched it, too.
I know. Like I said, I mean, seriously, the whole middle act of this movie is frankly a blur to me just within 2 days, which is, you know, a good sign.
It's really just for them to get from A to B, and the middle stuff sort of just happens, which is probably the opposite of what a road movie or adventure movie is probably supposed to be, which is that's the part that's supposed to be the exciting bit that we do remember. But anyway.
And yeah, as we mentioned, even though the ship's completely drained, they managed to trap the bad ape in the control room, and the bad ape's got his hands on one of the human guns, and he keeps firing it at it. No, look, a ricochet finally gets him, because I didn't see that coming. And then we have a long, tender moment between Helena Bonham Carter and Marky Mark, and they have a little kiss. Oh. And then he goes off and plants a big one on cleavage human chick who
we still have no idea really what her purpose is except for being human cleavage chick.
And object of Marky Mark's desire at the end, because I'm guessing they couldn't get away with Marky Mark having an aim as a love interest.
I know. Oh, but then the more I think about it, in a Tim Burton movie, anything's possible. But yeah, maybe not quite suitable for a mainstream film.
Yeah, I'm getting the feeling. I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Burton wanted it and somebody just went, no. No, Tim.
No.
Bad Tim. No.
I'm really going to have to go and watch the original movie because I want to see if a lot of this stuff actually does happen or if, you know, how much of it is... totally different, but anyway.
So there's this completely out of left field romance between Marky Mark and Blondie Cleavage Woman, and then he just goes straight off, jumps into the hairdresser ship, the hairdryer ship that's just landed, and takes off again for the giant purple storm. But this time he has no spacesuit. Good luck, Marky Mark. I'm thinking, yeah. Is that even possible? Because like, you had to wear a spaceship to fly. You had to wear a spacesuit to fly it the first time, and now you don't.
Oh, but he's invincible. He's invincible now. He saved the Planet of the Apes. So, so I don't know. Yeah, it just seemed again. It's like we've finished the crux of the story. Oh, we don't care about the bookends of the movie. Yeah, we'll just rush that through and not notice things like that.
Yeah, we'll just rush it off to make him go through the big purple glowing storm again because he thinks it's going to take him home, and just set up our final twist at the end to try to top the Statue of Liberty at the end of the original Planet of the Apes.
And I think, too, I don't know if it was also them trying to... Probably was fishing for a sequel. I think it was also... Yeah, definitely hanging out for something like that. I don't know if it was a plan when they originally were going to make the movie. But, yeah, definitely felt they were leaving you with that.
Yeah, because if I look seriously, as soon as he crash-landed on Earth in Washington at the base of the Lincoln Memorial and he's climbing the steps up to the statue... And it's just like, yeah, I know what's coming, and
yeah, I know where this is going.
And I'm sure anyone out there who hasn't watched this movie yet can probably guess that he gets up there, but it's not Abraham Lincoln. It's the ape he defeated.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, and it's a thing about
a bit of a twist there. Sorry.
Yeah, and there's a big plaque that basically refers to this ape being defeated by Marky Mark, and all these police and everyone turn up, and they're all apes, and they arrest him. The end.
And probably setting up for a sequel, as I said, but that's where we end, and yeah, I still felt satisfied that it rounded it up, even though it sort of hadn't resolved itself, but yeah. I couldn't believe we got to the end, but yeah, I know you said, yeah, a 2-hour movie, but I felt it didn't really drag too much, even though there was a lot that we can't really remember.
Yeah, indeed. And Christian, you picked this movie, so if we move on to our thoughts about this movie and the redeeming factor, I shall go first, if that's all right with you.
Oh, definitely.
And you know what? I'm happy that it went fast for you, because it dragged for me. Really, apart from that, the initial opening really set you up for a fun, fast-paced, dumb movie. But then, when it got to it and they spent so much time trying to make these apes seem more like people than apes, but then you'd have the more aggressive ones who were constantly like this, non-stop, with no variation, who would then leap into the air and jump all over the walls at the slightest bit of anger. And it would happen again and again and again. And in the midst of this, they're all playing it way too serious. And you know, I just had such a challenge just being engaged with the dragging on. Look, I'm glad it had minimal CGI. I think that worked up very, very well in the movie. And the close-ups, as you mentioned before, the apes themselves, they did look good. I can't take that away from it. The practical makeups and minimal CGI used throughout this really, really worked well. But again, those gruff voices grated on me. You know, I don't know if I set myself up with an expectation that couldn't be met by thinking of this as Marky Mark and his Monkey Bunch. But, you know, the fun I was hoping to get out of this and the fun that was promised to me in that opening just fell away. And I just was thinking, this is dragging on and nothing is happening. We've got this massive center bit of the movie where they're doing thing after thing after thing, but it's doing nothing for the movie. It's just like in a holding pattern of cliche adventure scenes that aren't that interesting, with people that aren't that interesting and really have nothing going for them. And there's, it basically made it too long, too serious, way too predictable, and definitely, Christian, is for me, it's not redeemable.
Oh my gosh, Trevor, well, you've definitely made your thoughts known. Wow. Okay, well, I honestly am a bit shocked. I thought you would have I would not have actually picked you to have disliked the movie as much as you did. Because, look, let's just say up, you know, sort of about halfway through the movie, when I, you know, as I said earlier, it sort of started to occur to me, this is kind of a fun adventure road movie type B movie, you know, when I started to let that wash over me, that whole, what did you say earlier, a fun, fast-paced, dumb movie, I suppose. Once you realise it's kind of like that, I started really enjoying it and felt that I was enjoying it. Admittedly, as you said, through the middle, it just seemed like they were throwing bit after bit after bit, but it was fun and cheesy, and I think that Tim Burton actually did quite well, considering, okay, I know he doesn't want to look at it as a remake, but considering he's taken an old product pretty much and you know, remaking it, he did very well with it, you know. And I actually felt, can you believe, Trevor, and this was written 2 days ago, I've got the word breezy here in terms of the length, so I don't know, maybe we were watching a totally different movie. So probably the only things that I really disliked the most would have been the fact that every time they jumped in the air, as I said, it just felt like they were being pulled through on a harness. And one thing which I haven't mentioned earlier was how very studio-bound the entire thing felt. And I don't know, after a while, movies like that sort of tend to annoy me a bit. It just felt very, very fake, I suppose, then fitting in with the B-gradeness of it, I suppose. But I think, as I said, Tim Burton did quite well, and it was a fresh, exciting new take on a revival of the franchise. And I actually would have been really interested to see where the franchise would have continued after that, you know. So, and, you know, as we said earlier too, the makeup was very impressive, but in particular the male makeup. But I know we've mentioned that was to make the female apes a bit softer, but yeah, definitely the male ape makeup was the best. But no, Trevor, I'd definitely, okay, I wouldn't rave about it to the, you know, and join the fan club, but I definitely think the movie's redeemable, and I found it enjoyable as a As a, I think, as you said, a fun, fast-paced, dumb movie, I think. But I don't even think using the word dumb. I think it's just it's a middle-of-the-road fun movie to pass an afternoon with. But it'll never win any Oscars. And it probably didn't anyway.
We can agree on that, at least.
But now, the whole time I'm thinking to myself, hang on. Oh, should I be liking this? But yeah, no, so we definitely have got... gone 50-50 with that one, but yeah, so very interesting to hear your views on that.
Quite all right, and so, yep, that's another split decision. Wow, we've had a lot of those.
I know, and now you've got the very hard task of, I don't know if this is the right word, of redeeming us for the next one.
Yeah, well, before we get there, Chris,
we're just jumping ahead.
And,
always jumping on ahead. I don't want to think about these people that love it.
Yes, indeed. So, you know, you enjoyed the movie, you know, you're saying it's not a masterpiece, but you think it's perfectly redeemable, and I respect that. And you know what, Christian? I'm very glad you enjoyed this movie. At least one of us did. So there you go. But this movie does have its fans. So I do like to round out the movie with a nice positive and from someone who does believe the movie is redeemable. So I went back to Amazon, and I've grabbed another review. This one is titled Great Improvement on the Original. Finally, a great movie and storyline. Remember, it has been a long time since the end of the 70s series of the Planet of the Apes movies. The bad acting and plots have gone away, replaced with a much better original, in quotes, storyline and better acting. The storyline was similar to the original one in 1968, but with much needed improvements. The characters were not a bunch of idiots running around. Each side had strong characters and a good supporting cast. If you have seen Paul Giamatti in other roles, you'll get a big kick out of this one. Look fast in the wagon scene as the original Linda Harrison pops up briefly. Great improvement in the quality of the movie. 5 stars. For sure. 5 stars.
Oh, well, I enjoyed it, but yeah, I wouldn't go to the lengths of the 5-star review, especially saying that they managed to take... Well, I love how it said the original was just a whole heap of people running around, and this one was a bit more... Whereas I think the way you were talking, Trevor, the new one's a whole heap of people running around. So, yeah. Oh, well, everyone's entitled to their opinion, I suppose.
Absolutely. They completely are, even if they're wrong.
So, oh, good to know. And it's interesting, actually, as you said, so it was about 5 point something on IMDb. So it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of an average movie then, all round.
It's definitely got its fans, and that's fine. Again, we come with a split decision, so anyone out there wondering if they should watch this movie, you're going to have to work it out for yourself. And depending on who you speak to, that could be a good or a bad thing. It's entirely up to you. And now, definitely, Christian, you were jumping ahead, and you know what? There is quite a bit of pressure on me because I haven't mentioned too much about it, but we're going to be wrapping up season 3 of the Rufus Project soon, and we've only got one more mini episode and one more redeeming features cast, and that's going to be the end of season 3 with nothing happening until our irredeemable Christmas special. Keep an eye on our Facebook page for more details about that in the future. Hint, hint. We are going to have to finish this season of the podcast with something pretty special, so I'm not going to beat around the bush here, Christian. For the next redeeming features cast, we are going to watch Doctor Strange.
Oh, fantastic. Have you already seen it?
I've seen it, but I'm not talking about the one you're thinking of.
Oh, my gosh. So, okay, I know nothing about these movies. So, again, going in cold. So, what year are we looking at, Trevor?
Well, yeah, it's not the big blockbuster, racing up the charts, immensely popular Benedict Cumberbatch, very good movie that I've seen that's just come out. No, no, no.
Yeah.
In 1978, a nice and very campy-looking, for you, Christian, telemovie of Doctor Strange was released, as a pilot episode for a possible Doctor Strange TV series. It starred Peter Hooton as Doctor Strange and Jessica Walter as Morgana Le Fay, being the bad guy. Now, they've both had rather extensive TV careers and quite a few movie roles. For example, Peter Hooton is actually in an upcoming horror movie called Soul Eater. I've got no idea what that's going to be like. And Jessica Walter is pretty well known now and very famous now.
I love her. Mallory
in the hit series Archer.
And I think she's the mother on Arrested Development.
She was the
female that inspired Fatal Attraction. She was in Play Misty for Me in the '70s with Clint Eastwood. So yeah, I actually have heard of her being in a movie that sounded a lot like this. So it must have been this one.
There we go.
I'm willing to give it a go.
Now, you're not going to find this on any of the normal services. It's definitely not on Netflix. But I have found the entire movie available to watch for free on YouTube. I don't know about the legitimacy of it. It hasn't been taken down with the new Doctor Strange being released, so I'm guessing no one cares.
Yeah. Oh, well, it's good to see that it's very accessible, so we can all watch it, and hopefully we might get some feedback from people and see if they can redeem it as well. But from the way you're talking, Trevor, it might not have been regarded as quite a good movie/telemovie.
I really have absolutely no idea. I heard about this. I checked out the trailer and just thought, this is the perfect balance. You've got the good old geeky side of it with Doctor Strange, and you've got one hell of a campy looking movie from the late 70s for Christian. It's just like, this is it. This is going to be our finale.
I just brought up the Wikipedia page, and the poster says it all. So let's just say he's wearing a flared jumpsuit with a whole heap of bling, and Jessica Walter's there and wearing what looks like a disco cap. I mean, disco Wonder Woman outfit.
Could be some real magic.
Oh, and you know how much I love the late 70s, so yeah, Trevor, I think I'm going to really enjoy this one.
it's going to be, I think, if nothing else, it's going to make for a very interesting podcast. I do have a couple of other possibilities in mind for our final podcast, but just stay tuned for more details. I'll be very specific in our next mini podcast, because just trying to finalize a few bits and pieces. I don't want to promise anything until it's guaranteed. But as a definite, we will be talking about the 1978 Doctor Strange telemovie next time around.
I think I'm looking forward to it. So I'm willing to give it a go. So I look forward to it, though.
I am strangely excited about this and probably shouldn't be, but that's how we go. And of course, if anyone out there would like to get in touch with us, do you think we were too harsh on Planet of the Apes? Do you think we were too generous? Do you have any comments if you've seen this 1978 version of Doctor Strange? We would love to hear from you. You can get in touch with us by heading to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leaving a comment below this very episode. You can find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook nice and easily, or you can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. We would love to hear from you, and particularly because after this next one, pretty much it's a blank slate for next year. So if you've got any suggestions for redeeming features movies, we would love to hear them.
Definitely. And as we've seemed to have found out after doing three seasons, there are plenty of movies out there and there are plenty still more to discover.
There is such a wide range of movies. Good, bad, bad, good, good, bad, and everywhere in between.
And ugly. And yeah. And there's been a few that we've gone, oh my God, wow. But I don't think we've said that to too many movies. So, but we never know. It could come up soon. It could be Doctor Strange from 1978.
Yeah, we certainly have not hit too many redeemables this year. So at some point, it's going to have to turn around and we're going to have to get a run of redeemable movies. Surely the law of averages is going to balance out at some point. But yeah, so until then, definitely tune in next week for the mini episode, where we can give you more details about what's happening with our next redeeming features cast, as well as whatever Christian and I, whatever's grabbing our attention at the time. And then, yeah, certainly come back for our chat about Doctor Strange. I think it's going to be quite a good one.
Yes, or an interesting one. And I think that it's going to be interesting watching this movie as well. So, but as we said earlier, I think I look forward to the chat even more.
Absolutely. So, yeah, until next time, enjoy Doctor Strange, Christian.
Thanks, Trevor. We'll speak to you then.
Too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. IMDb says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy. Oh.